empty pews in churches across America, we've seen the headlines. Not a surprise that studies are saying that religion is in decline, and the growth in evangelical congregations has not stopped the overall slide. According to the Pew Research Center, America's fastest growing religious affiliation is no religion at all. The non-religious are the single largest religious identification among young voters in this country. Now fast forward to the University of Miami, which has announced a new prominent faculty position, which will hold the title of studying atheism, humanism, and secular ethics. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're exploring atheism this hour with Ryan Cragen, a sociologist of religion. He's an associate professor at the University of Tampa. His research and writing focuses on religion with an emphasis on the non-religious. His research has been published in multiple academic journals, and he's author of the edited volume called Organized Secularism in the United States that came out last year. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
Well, when people think of atheists, the companion word that sometimes comes to mind, maybe non-believers, perhaps that's getting oversimplified. Is there more to atheism than what comes to mind?
You know, that's a great question, and it's actually a question that's debated within the atheist community, whether atheism is just the negation of theism or whether it actually stands for something more. To kind of give a little bit more there, there is actually a whole kind of other subset of beliefs or worldviews that get associated with this, but it's actually usually referred to as humanism, right? So humanism is actually kind of the assertion of positive beliefs, so what these people do believe, whereas atheism is the negation of what, so it's a suggestion of what they don't believe, right? So A is without, theism is belief in God. So atheism is just a reference to what they don't believe. They don't believe in a God. But humanism is a pretty well-developed philosophical worldview that describes all of the many things they do believe, that they value life and they value the world and they value critical thinking. So you can actually couple the two together. Most atheists in the U.S. would also identify as humanists.
Take us way, way back, if you will, Ryan, and help us understand how atheists evolved and where this came from.
Well, you know, that's a great question, another really good one. We now have pretty compelling evidence that there have been atheists for over 2,000 years, closer to 2,500 years, well-established, like, clear understanding of atheism. And in all likelihood, atheism goes all the way back to the origins of religion. There were probably people who, you know, when somebody said, "Oh, I believe in this tree god," they're like, "Yeah, I don't buy that." But we actually have really good evidence that the ancient Greeks had a clear sense of materialism and atheism. That there were people who were very skeptical. There's some great research that has just recently come out on that, and of course that carries all the way through to today. Though, kind of its most recent iterations actually stem from the 16th and 17th centuries, where we start to get a pretty clear sense in modern times, right, if we want to use that as modern times, through the Enlightenment, of people revisiting this idea and saying, you know, we don't actually believe all of these things. And I think it becomes much easier to take an atheistic position once you actually have the development of evolution. That was actually the holdout for many of the early founding fathers who were deists, right? Mm. They believed in a god, but it was not a personal god. It was kind of a god who was distant and maybe started everything, but they didn't have a good explanation for the origins of humanity. But once you get the advent of evolution, then it becomes much easier to say, actually, these are all natural processes and there's absolutely no need for any divine entity at all. So then it becomes much easier. But atheism has been around for at least 2,500 years.
Fast forward to today, and things get kind of complicated. Atheism comes with quite a bit of baggage, if you will. There's a lot of interest in it. It's under the microscope. Pew Research Center, we're seeing statistics come out left and right. It's rising. It's not. Where do we stand with atheism today, and why are we so intensely interested in it?
That's another really good question. So we, as you mentioned at the very beginning, right, the non-religious, which is not the same as atheism, and we can clarify that. The non-religious are the single largest, quote-unquote, religious group in the U.S. They make up about 24 to 25% of the U.S. population, and for people under 30, it's about 33 to 35%. But not all of them are atheists, right? Mm. So non-religious, as we use it technically, just means they don't report having a religious affiliation. Atheists are those who say, yeah, I actually don't believe in a God. Now, that's not there are lots of ways to not believe in a God, which is kind of weird. We could go into that. But our current best estimates put the atheist population in the U.S. at somewhere between 3 and 7%, right? Okay. Which actually makes them larger than, say, Muslims or Mormons or Jews, all three of those groups combined. So that's our current best estimate. Now, I do want to point out there has been some really, really recent research that came out last year suggesting that's probably an underestimate because there still is a substantial amount of prejudice towards atheists. So a lot of people may be non-believers and simply don't admit it.
And we're going to get into that prejudice issue in a moment. We're talking with Ryan Cragen, a sociologist of religion. He's an associate professor at the University of Tampa. We're talking about atheism, its past, its present, where it is going, and how we are teaching it in academia. You can join this conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think atheism is a suitable subject of academia? What do you think atheism's role is in public life? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Ryan, the University of Miami, as you know, was given more than $2 million to create a prominent faculty position for the study of atheism and humanism and secular ethics. What is your reaction to this?
A great question. My initial response is it's about time, right? We actually have endowed chairs for Mormon studies. We have endowed chairs for Jewish studies. We have endowed chairs for Islamic studies in the U.S. So all of those chairs, right? So basically what that chair position does is it suggests that this is a community that has come together to suggest that the academic study of whatever is of interest, right? So let's say it's Jewish studies, has reached a point of legitimacy and validity that it's time to actually dedicate some serious resources to it. And so that's what you get with, say, the chair of Mormon studies or the chair of Islamic studies. And that's absolutely, I think, what's happening with the chair of atheism studies, if you will. That's not the full title of the chair. But I think what it suggests is a coming of age of the research into and the study of atheism and non-religion and humanism is that there's a big enough community now that's interested in this and wants to see credible academic research focused on atheism and non-religion that the resources have finally come together to endow a chair.
What kind of research can come out of the academic setting on these areas?
Sure. So there are at least two ways to think about that, right? The first is that you can study atheists, right, or non-religious people, or the movement that exists to try and broaden the knowledge of and the awareness of those groups in the U.S. So you mentioned my book that just recently came out. It's an edited volume with a couple of great colleagues, Crystal Manning and Lori Fazzino, called Organized Secularism in the U.S. And what we're doing in that book is we're looking at non-religious secular organizations and trying to understand what it is they're doing, where they come from, so the history of that. We're basically studying organized secularism as a social movement, kind of like the civil rights movement.
Oh, giving
US,
it a
right?
face, if you will.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it's existed at least since the 1940s. It actually goes back further than that. But in its kind of current manifestations, at least since the 1940s, there have been splits in the movement. You know, it's a movement like any other social movement, like the civil rights movement or feminist movements or, you know, women's rights movements or the gay and lesbian rights movements. It's a movement in that sense that it's advocating for the normalization of non-religion in the U.S., that it's okay to be non-religious. So one of the ways that you can study that academically is to think about it as a movement and try and understand what it is, you know, where does the movement come from? What are their goals? What are their objectives? How organized are they? What kinds of things are they doing? So that's one way to think about how to study this academically is we're not advocating for the movement. We're trying to understand the movement, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, from a philosophical standpoint, you can wrestle with the arguments of atheism. So that's kind of a different perspective. The sociologist may study non-religious people and the movement. Philosophers may understand, you know, study just like the philosophy behind it.
According to Pew Research Center's new study on the future of world religions, the total number of religiously unaffiliated people, which includes atheists in that, is expected to rise just slightly to 1.2 billion people in 2060. But this growth is projected to occur at the same time that other religious groups and the global population overall are growing even faster. We're having a conversation about atheism, its history, its future, and its place in academia with Ryan Cragen. He's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Tampa. You can enter the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of atheism's role in public life should be? Should young people be exposed to the study of non-belief? Call in or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Back after the news. Some social theorists have suggested that as countries develop economically, as global capitalism takes hold, more people will move away from religious affiliation. And that's as been seen in Europe, but there's little evidence of such phenomenon in Muslim-majority countries. That's according, again, to recent research from Pew. We're exploring atheism and what Americans think about it, how to study and talk about atheism in schools with Ryan Cragen. He's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Tampa. Gathering your insights on atheism and secularism in society, in your family, your stories are welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you believe atheists should have the same rights as other groups? Do you think the religiously unaffiliated need more representation? Are they undermined in American society? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Mark, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mark.
Hi. The term atheism is a little ambiguous. Most people, though, when they refer to atheism, their meaning opposition to the Judeo-Christian notion of a personal God, but that kind of leaves other notions out in the cold. What about naturalistic pantheism, for example, which is where I tend to lean towards? There, essentially, God is treated as one and the same as the universe.
Ryan Cragen, pantheists.
Sure. We don't actually have really good numbers on pantheism per se, right? Now, I can tell you a deistic notion of, say, a higher power. We actually know it's about 18% of the U.S. population identify as saying that they don't believe in a personal God, but they believe in a higher power. So your naturalistic pantheists or your pantheists generally would probably fall into that group. But what percentage of them are actually naturalistic pantheists? It's a very specific subset of believers in the U.S. But they would be a relatively small percentage of the population. But certainly they actually fall often inside the camp of the non-religious.
So it's a pretty big sandbox, if you will.
Absolutely. So, and that's something that we didn't really mention, that just saying that you have no religious affiliation, which is what we mean by the non-religious, it's a sizable percentage of the population, almost one in four today, but it doesn't say anything about your belief towards a higher power or a God, right? So yes, a sizable percentage of the non-religious are atheists and agnostics, but a sizable percentage are actually deists as well. So they actually, theists. Yeah. They do believe in a personal God.
Mark, thanks for the call. Let's go to David now, who joins us from Ettrick. Hi, David. Hey, are you there, David? Oh, David is not there, but is wondering, do atheists believe in the existence of Jesus as a human being, or do most believe he didn't exist?
Another really great question. I will admit there's a bit of contention over this, right? Some believe that Jesus may have been a mythical character. I think most today would suggest that there clearly was a man named Jesus, who had a following roughly around the time period that it's believed he lived, right? And most, I would say, kind of experts on the Bible, so biblical studies scholars, would suggest, yeah, there was a person named Jesus, where atheists would then come in, right? So there is a tiny percentage who say, no, Jesus didn't exist. But I think most would say, sure, there was a guy named Jesus. He was a human, right? He had a following, and then he died. They just take out all of the supernatural elements from the Jesus story and would say those have all been added in later, right? So those have been created. So you introduce those to build up the idea that Jesus was actually divine, was actually God, right? All of that kind of gets added into this. And I think there's pretty compelling evidence, again, coming out of biblical studies and biblical criticism, suggesting that that's our current best understanding of who Jesus was.
Ryan, stepping away from that for a moment and looking at the global forces that we see today, economies changing so rapidly with technology, perhaps people becoming more isolated by their smartphones, for instance, how does capitalism influence religion and especially atheism?
Yeah, so that's a really fun question, and you could think about it in a lot of different ways. One of the things that I would actually suggest is, at a very basic level, capitalism can actually compete with religion. And I'll give you an example from a project I'm working on right now, and I'll be focusing mostly in the U.S., though we can turn to other countries if you're interested in that. I was recently approached by a local congregation here in Tampa, and they have attendance numbers, right? So they've been tracking their attendance for years. And here in Tampa, we do have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, an NFL football team. Well, the NFL has most of their games on Sundays, which, why is that, right? And that actually starts in the 1990s for a variety of complicated reasons, but it's because a lot of people have free time on Sundays. They can go to the games. So the question that was raised is, when there are Tampa Bay home games, does attendance go down at this particular congregation? They had the attendance numbers, right? But they didn't have a statistician, and I happen to do numbers, right? I like statistics. So they asked me, can you actually see if that's the case? And it turns out, absolutely, it is the case. So when there are Buccaneers home games, their attendance goes down. Now, I can't say that for all of the churches locally, right? But it's a good illustration of how capitalism actually competes quite directly with religion. And so that's a very specific one. But generally, we used to have throughout the U.S. what are referred to as blue laws. Blue laws restricted what different companies and corporations could do on Sundays, usually preventing them from opening at a certain time, preventing the sale of alcohol before 11 a.m., which is still the case in Hillsborough County. So there are all of these kind of specific laws suggesting, no, we got to keep Sunday as this special, sacred, holy day. Those blue laws have been falling across the United States, and it's largely driven by capitalism. So the corporations are saying, well, I don't understand why you're going to say we can't open and make money, right? Just to protect the interests of the religious. And as a result, you actually see more and more opportunities for people to do things on Sunday mornings. Your local gym is open early Sunday morning. Movie theaters are now showing movies at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings. So increasingly, you're seeing direct competition between capitalism and religion.
We're understanding more about atheism today and how it is taught with Ryan Cragen as our guide. He's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Tampa. Getting your thoughts, your insights on the future of secularism in America. How do you view atheists? Do you look differently upon someone you know who practices a religion? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Daryl in Couderay. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing well. Go ahead.
I believe atheism should be studied, but my question would be, that personally, I believe God is an acronym, having three definitions of guy on duty, girl on duty, or in some cases, goofs on duty, if you consider some of our leaders. Does that make me an atheist?
Ooh. Ryan. Well, you know, I love the unique questions, right? So guy on
you didn't
duty
know
or
you would have to
duty.
Pick apart an acronym this morning.
Right. That's interesting. You know, it's a great question. Again, if we go back to like the technical definition of what it means to be an atheist, A is just without, right? So when you tack A on the front of a word, it's without. And theism is belief in God. So atheism is the lack of belief in God. It's not necessarily a direct assertion that there is no God. It's the lack of belief in God. As I like to point out, one of the implications of thinking about atheism that way is that it means all babies are atheists, right? What do I mean by that? Well, they're born without any specific belief in God. They have to be taught to believe in a God. So going back to Daryl's question about his acronym, right? If he's actually kind of thinking about God as an acronym is just like whoever is responsible for everything. It depends. Is he invoking some supernatural entity here? If he is, then maybe not, right? But if he's saying that, you know, it's just whatever happens, right? It's naturalistic processes, then arguably so, he would be an atheist. And of course, most of us are atheists towards all of the other gods, right? It's just the one God, the Judeo-Christian God that most people actually believe in the U.S. So most of us are atheists towards Zeus or towards Athena or Jupiter or any of the other gods that have been posited because we don't believe in those gods. We lack belief in those. It's just the one God that seems to be kind of the remaining God that people seem to care about.
Daryl, thanks for joining us this morning. Ryan, as we explore this topic, what are the prejudices you see? You know, as the nation, America was formed in its early days, it seemed that religious people, you know, it shaped the nation. And perhaps today there's a different view on atheists. Where do you see prejudices creeping in?
Yeah, that's actually a great two-part question, right? So we can go back to, say, the founding fathers and whether religion was really the core of founding this country. And I would challenge that, right? I would say that's much less the case than a lot of people think. Many of the founding fathers were deists, right? Again, being a belief in some sort of higher power, a god, if you will, but not an active god. And many of them were actually quite critical of Christianity. We also should point out that the U.S. was the first secular country on the planet. And that was due to the fact that when, after the revolution, right, when the states got together to form a constitution, they immediately said, well, which of our churches is going to be the state church? Because of the original 13 colonies, 11 had state churches. And they pretty quickly realized, well, no one's going to win that argument. So they actually wrote that right out. And they said, we're not going to have a state church. In fact, there's going to be no religious test for office. And they pretty clearly separated the two out, right? And then, of course, we get the writings of Jefferson saying that there should be a wall of separation. So in a lot of ways, this country was not necessarily founded on religion per se. It was actually on a divide between government and religion to make sure that no one religion controlled everything, because we are a nation of many different beliefs. So that would be my first point. The second point is the prejudice today. And I'm actually going to draw pretty heavily on the work of Will Gervais, who's a University of Kentucky psychologist, who's done a lot of, I mean, I've done a bunch of research on this too, but he's done a lot of research in trying to figure out why people in the U.S. don't like atheists. And what he's come down to, which I think is really interesting, is the reason is actually different for why people don't like atheists than, say, why people don't like gay or lesbian individuals. For gay and lesbian individuals, those who don't like them experience disgust, right? So there's something disgusting about them is what drives their prejudice. For atheists, it's distrust, that people, when they think about an atheist, they think, well, if they don't believe there's some God or higher power watching them, what motivation do they have to behave in a trustworthy fashion? Mm-hmm. And so it's that general sense of distrust that, like, I can't trust that this individual is actually going to behave morally because God, they don't believe in a God who's watching them and policing their behavior, that drives a lot of the prejudice towards atheists in the U.S. And I think there are a lot of other factors, and certainly we could talk about some of those other factors, but that seems to be one of the main underlying factors behind the prejudice against atheists in the U.S.
Can you see those creep into laws, into fabric of society?
Absolutely. So we still have, even though it really can't be enforced because of Supreme Court decisions, we still have a number of states in the U.S. that have it written into their constitution. So the state constitution, not our federal one, that atheists cannot hold public office. Right. And that, I think that is directly rooted in these ideas that people don't trust atheists. And there are a lot of people who have kind of argued that over the years, that like, oh, atheists can't be trusted, right? No, it turns out when you actually look at the moral behavior of atheists, there are at best marginal differences, with atheists being slightly more moral, or no differences at all. So it's not that atheists are actually immoral. Atheists are just as moral, if not more moral, than religious people. And you can see this in a variety of other measures, right? There have been a bunch of experiments that have established this. We can look at national level data. We can look at all sorts of data to suggest that atheists are perfectly moral individuals, but it's still that underlying distrust that has led to all sorts of things. This is also why, even though it's certainly legal, right? So you can't say that atheists can't run for office in the U.S. It's certainly legal to do so. But if you look particularly at the federal level, how many atheists do we actually have in office, right? If atheists were represented at their numbers in the population, we should have between 3 and 7, at least, senators who are openly atheistic. And in Congress, it should be about 40 individuals who are openly atheistic. In the Senate, we have a grand total of 0 individuals who are openly atheistic. There may be some who are closeted. And in Congress, we have one open non-believer and one closeted non-believer. So we are dramatically underrepresented, and that's largely because if you say you are an atheist, it is going to be very, very hard to get elected in the U.S. About 50% of the U.S. population say, even if it's a well-qualified candidate from my party, if they say they're an atheist, I won't vote for them for office.
And we'll explore politics after the news and how that works into the religion and non-belief. But let's first bring in Liz here in Southeast Wisconsin. Hi, Liz. Go ahead.
Thank you and good morning. I just wanted to say that the question was brought up earlier, do we look at atheists differently? And my family is very, very diverse in that my father was baptized Lutheran and hasn't been in a church in about 4 years. My mom is atheist. My brother is atheist. I am a every Sunday Lutheran. And I have 2 cousins that are Wiccan and an aunt that is pure pagan that says that Wiccans are too fluffy. So we have a policy in our family that we don't try to convert each other with our beliefs, but we do listen to the beliefs that they have. And we've all gotten along really well over the many years that we've been around.
Liz, thank you so much with your story and how your family works with religion and not. And Ryan, your thoughts and what Liz has to say here.
Yeah, again, thank you, Liz. That's actually really, really delightful to see that it's working, right? Because it, so often it doesn't work. One thing that her comment kind of made me think about is actually having contact with atheists and non-religious people, but particularly atheists. So knowing them, knowing a family member is an atheist, tends to reduce the prejudice that people feel. Right. So that may very well be why her family is able to get along, is because they have multiple members who have different perspectives. Right. And it's complicated and diverse. And I think that's great. But having that diversity actually reduces prejudice. So knowing people who are atheists in an egalitarian fashion, it's called the contact hypothesis. It's been around for a long time, actually reduces the prejudice.
Liz, thanks so much for the call. The University of Miami has created a prominent faculty position in its religious studies department for the study of atheism, humanism, and secular ethics. It's the first of its kind in this country, and it got us thinking. We're tracing the history and looking at the future of what it means when Americans reject any religious affiliation. Ryan Cragen is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Tampa, and he's our guide this hour. He writes about atheism. Question to ponder: have Americans lost touch with the hierarchy, the authority, and the tradition that some churches, that some religions instill? Your thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll return after a news update. According to a recent study by the Public Religion Research Institute, the percentage of white Republicans with no religious affiliation has nearly tripled since 1990. As we explore secularism this hour, it's also good to take a look at how politics collides with religion and non-religion. We're understanding more about atheism today, the complexities, how it is taught, with Ryan Cragen as our guide. He's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Tampa. Gathering your thoughts on the future of atheism, how do you view atheists? Do you look differently upon someone you know who practices a religion and one who does not? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to George now in Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Yes, hi. I was very interested in what you said about atheists are not trusted. And I'd just like to explore that a little deeper. And here's my take on it. You also mentioned that they weren't trusted because people didn't think they could be moral. I think that's probably right. And the reason for that, I believe, is that a lot of people who are not atheists think that everyone's actions will ultimately be judged by some higher power, and that we will, in the end, be punished or rewarded for what we've done. And I think people who are not atheists can't quite wrap their minds around the fact that someone might just be moral because they think it's the right thing to do.
Ryan.
Yeah, George hit it perfectly, right? I mean, that is the whole underlying philosophy behind humanism, right? And I would actually encourage your listeners to look up like the Humanist Manifestos and the American Humanist Association, which have developed this really clear naturalistic worldview that makes the argument that George just said, which is you can be moral because it's the right thing to do. Right. Not because there's some reward. And we can get into all sorts of kind of big, complicated arguments about moral development. Try and go back to Kohlberg's stages of moral development. Thinking about behaving, you know, in inappropriate ways because there's a punishment is a really rudimentary level of morality. It's kind of how we want our kids to behave. Right. It's like if you do that, mom and dad are watching. We're going to punish you. But we hope that over time, and I don't mean to suggest anything about, you know, maturity here, but over time, kids will eventually arrive at the point of going, actually, I'm not going to do this because I think it's just wrong and it may hurt people. And that's really the underlying philosophy behind humanism, is to arrive at a point where we say, you know what, I'm going to do the right thing because it's the right thing, not because there's some intrinsic reward or some extrinsic, actually, reward from doing it, but because it's just the right thing to do.
George, thanks so much for the call. And Jake wants to touch on these same lines. Jake in Winona, go ahead.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, so I pretty much just wanted to echo that last caller's points and what your guest was just speaking about. What I would challenge Christians in particular, and I grew up in that environment, but take a step back and look at the vision where your morality comes from. Motivation for your behavior. As your guest just pointed out, the morals and behaviors in Christianity have a very extrinsic motivation. They're motivated to behave.
And Jake, I'm so sorry, but you are breaking up. And I'm so glad you were able, though, to echo the caller before. Ryan, let's touch on for a moment, if you will, the rise of mega churches. And we see people, thousands of people congregating at mega churches, specifically looking at ones in Dallas, Houston, especially. Where does that fit in this conversation of how we also see this rise in non-believers who are not filling pews?
Sure. Another really good question. So, there are a lot of ways to think about megachurches, right? But I think it's important to recognize that the megachurch phenomenon has a number of underlying factors, right? One, we live in an environment where religions are subsidized indirectly, right? So, I don't mean to go down that path, but people can kind of think about that. But in order to get paid, right, pastors have to bring people into their congregations. And because we live in a religiously pluralistic environment here in the U.S., it's a marketplace, if you will, people can choose. And so what you've seen happen is basically market forces have driven the rise of megachurches. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you've got the staid traditional service with organ music that's kind of boring, that may appeal to a certain generation, a certain group of people, but a lot of people like these big bands, right? I mean, it's a rock concert is what you're going to, and it's huge, and there are big screens, and it's really entertaining. Well, that's all driven by market forces, if you will. Those churches are doing what they can to make sure people actually attend, and that, of course, means that they make more money. So you can think of mega churches as the evolution of churches in a religious marketplace where they are being forced to innovate, and that innovation has led to these really big, exciting, entertaining churches. Now, add to that, they're also competing with the NFL. Right. So and it's not just the NFL, but all sorts of other secular entities where there is entertainment, where they have big music and they have big billboards and it's really entertaining. So why have we seen this rise of megachurches? Well, people want to be entertained, right? They want to be entertained in very specific ways, and the megachurches have tapped into that. One last thing that I'll add to that is megachurches are also a reflection of the secularizing of religion in the U.S. And I know that sounds really weird to think religion secularizing, but if you go to many of these megachurches, there's a lot more discussion about how to be a good person in this life and how to live a good life than there is about hellfire and damnation and all of the horrible sinners who are in the congregation that day. It's very much a positive, uplifting message meant to kind of improve your life right now. And what that kind of means at some level is that it's been a watering down of traditional Orthodox Christian positions.
Let's go to Zach now, who joins us from Manitowoc. Hi, Zach. Hi there,
hello.
Zach. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was calling to say that, like, in my experience, there's generally two broad categories of atheists: little a atheists, which I like kind of define as more or less they don't believe in a god and they more or less live and let live, and then you have like capital A atheists who are like actually more anti-theists and actively engaging with like Christian people and trying to sway them away from being Christian, or sometimes they might even look down on them, or they're more provocateurs about it. It's kind of like more like the Richard Dawkins type.
Sure.
So, yeah, so Zach seems to want to compartmentalize, perhaps, or try to make some, perhaps, definitions, if you will, within atheists.
Right. This is actually, I mean, I remember the first time I told a colleague about the differences among atheists. And he's like, you mean there are denominations among atheists? And I was like, yeah, kind of. So what Zach is actually describing, there are terms for this. And this is, again, a great question. Thank you, Zach. We often refer to them as positive versus negative atheists, right? Now, he's added a kind of activist component to that. But let me just describe the positive versus negative. So positive atheists are individuals who assert positively the non-existence of an entity. Right? So they're making a positive assertion that God doesn't exist. And there are many atheists who, and I think most people would actually say, well, I'm going to make a positive assertion that Zeus doesn't exist. So we're all kind of positive atheists towards Zeus, right? But where you get kind of the kind of confrontational atheist is the one who says, well, the Judeo-Christian God, I assert that God doesn't exist. It's a positive atheist position. The negative atheist position is really when you don't know about a God, and therefore don't believe in that God. I love to use the example of Nojeror, who is the Norse goddess of fertility, right? So it's a fertility goddess. Most of your listeners have probably never heard of Nojeror, and as a result, are negative atheists towards Nojeror. They don't know about the God, so they can't believe in the God, right? So there are different ways to be an atheist. And then, of course, there's an activism level that you can tack on to that. But going back to my comment that all babies are atheists, right? All babies are negative atheists. They have to be taught to believe in a God. Positive atheism comes about much later, and not everybody is a positive atheist towards gods.
Zach, thanks for the call. Let's squeeze in one more call here with Mary Kay in Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay.
Good morning. I believe that atheism is a religion. It's a political group that stops other people from practicing their religion.
What do you mean? Give us a little more there, Mary Kay.
You have monuments set up. It says, you know, with the name God on it. They make you take them down. They should have no right to take them down because those were put up before this political group was formed.
So Mary Kay, Ryan, is really seeing the politicizing of atheism in America.
Sure. And I can certainly understand that, right? And Mary Kay's point is, you know, it's a very common point to suggest that atheists are certainly active, right? What I think is missing in some of those comments is a little bit of nuance, right? So when we have monuments, say, on public ground that advocate for a particular belief system, that's actually a violation of our constitutional rights. So what it is it's the advocacy of a specific type of religion over other forms, and our secular government is not allowed to do that. It can't say we're going to give preference to this religion over this religion. That's fundamentally kind of a core element of what we have in our secular government here in the US, is it doesn't play favorites. And a lot of times I think people fail to realize why this is good for everybody, right? Because let's say that we did get an Orthodox Jew who took office, right? And they started to favor Orthodox Judaism in the US, then suddenly all of the Protestant Christians would be freaking out saying that's not fair. Well, flip that around, right? And now you get a sense of how atheists and all the minority religions have felt in the US for hundreds of years. It has been largely Protestant Christians who have been running this country. And when they favor Protestant Christianity, the rest of us go, hold on, that's not fair. So it's not that we're saying you can't have your religion. Absolutely. Have your religion, but do it on your own religious time, in your own religious space. Don't force it on us.
So, Ryan, very quickly, in the last few seconds we have with you, how do you teach atheism in America, in our schools, in academia?
Sure. I think it's important to raise this as an objective question, right? What is atheism? Who are the atheists? To think about it that way. It's not meant to be an advocacy position, right? So I certainly will talk about it in my classes, but I never take the position that people should or should not be atheists. They should just have a better understanding of what it is, why those positions exist, what these people want, right? Just like any other minority group, we can understand it, we can study it without advocating for it.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ryan Cragen is a sociologist of religion. He's an associate professor at the University of Tampa. His research and writing focuses on religion with an emphasis on the non-religious. His research has been published in multiple academic journals, and he's the author of the edited volume called Organized Secularism in the United States that came out last year. This Hour of the Morning Show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.